All right, so there is a story that I want to share with you and the listeners. It's not really movie related, but it's a lot of fun. This is the headline. Chop Shop. Canine unit Watch. Bites cow. Shop. Georgetown Retrofit. County deputy uses taser on canine, and cow kicks deputy. This is not The Onion. This is a straight-up South Carolina story that really happened. And the circle of life, as far as I'm concerned. But this is not a Not The Onion podcast. Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. This is Season 6, Episode 8. And this is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen. So why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
Absence of Travis, a.k.a. Fat Man and Little Travis.
Okay, all right. I'll take the second one. I don't get the first one.
Absence
but...
of Malice.
Oh, okay. And as always, I'm joined here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer, The Road to Perdition, a.k.a. Slap Sean.
Nice.
And further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, Watch Chop Retrofit. Because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. And a quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remakes and reboots and sequel-dependent culture. Fuck that shit. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
All right, so that will bring us into our first segment. And the first one is going to be movie news. And this is where Sean and I, we present a modicum of interest in the the stories that surround our topic at hand or the topic of this podcast. So we pay attention to movie news and sequel, reboot, remake news, and we try to present the highlights of the past week to you, the listeners. So first up, we've got a couple of RIPs. The big one. Terry Jones,
yeah,
a charter member of Monty Python and also a very accomplished comedian, actor, and filmmaker in his own right, has died at the age of 77 after a bout with dementia.
Yes.
So rest in peace to Terry Jones. And just in case you were wondering... He's not dead. All right. Also, another RIP goes out to John Carlin. He was an actor in Dark Shadows and also Cagney and Lacey. He died at the age of 86. And you threw that story to me. Do we know anything else about him?
Yeah, he did some other Hollywood stuff, films, particularly one really bad B movie that was along the same lines as Dark Shadows.
Okay.
But the name escapes me.
Gotcha.
But he did a lot of television work.
And it's Carlin, K-A-R-L-E-N, not C-A-R-L-I-N. No relation. Next, we've got the crazy Joe DiVola arc in Seinfeld is basically the same plot as Joker. I don't know how many of our listeners out there are Seinfeld fans. I hope all of them. But what should they remember about the Joe DiVola arc?
Well, Joe DiVola was a clown.
Yes.
But also he had run-ins with Jerry when they were doing the Jerry show, the television show. Mm-hmm. And he blamed Jerry much the same way that Fleck blamed De Niro's character in the film. And there are a lot of overlapping similarities, and it does follow the same path.
And it's also part of like the later seasons of Seinfeld, right? Like when they're actually doing the show.
Yeah, the show about
the
nothing.
The show about nothing within a show about nothing. All right, next big news: Taika Waititi is being courted to make a Star Wars movie. I think that's fantastic news. I love what he does. His small films, his big films. He's got a great sense of humor. Also, a kind of grand vision.
I agree, and I think that it would be a breath of fresh air for sure.
There you go.
Yeah. Same way Favreau has been for The Mandalorian.
True. All right, next up, The Karate Kid is in training for Broadway. A musical adaptation has an original screenwriter on board. And so what do we say about that, Sean?
Sweep the leg, sweep the leg, sweep the leg.
Get him a body bag, get him a body bag. And so that will wrap us up on movie news for this week, unless you had any more.
No, I think we're
that's
good.
It. Yeah. All right. So as soon as that phone rings, there it is. It's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Howdy, choppers. The Outsider is on HBO Go. Mackenzie Davis starred in Terminator Dark Fate. Travis, the African-American actress you were thinking of from Motherless Brooklyn, is Gugu Mbatha-Raw. I recently saw her in Free State of Jones as Rachel, Newt Knight's second wife. Bobby Cannavale will be whoever he is to you guys, but to me, he'll always be the guy Samantha from Sex and the City dated, who had the funkiest spunk. And his character was Adam Ball. Ba-dum-psh. I'm going to go have a cup of coffee with some Skinny and Sweet. See you next week.
All right, Dana. Well, that certainly was a Skinny and Sweet bit of funky spunk. And we thank you for all of your hard work. That will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, which brings us to the theme of the episode. In celebration of what would have been his 95th birthday, we're talking about the films of Paul Newman. Had he been alive today, or actually on January 26th, when this episode goes kerplunk, he would have been 95 years old. Paul Newman turned to acting after getting kicked off the football team in college. He made his Broadway debut in 1953 and began doing television and films, eventually becoming known as one of the finest actors of his time. He also created a food company called Newman's Own that donates all the proceeds to charity. Newman died of cancer on September 26, 2008. What else do we need to say about the man?
I was observing the other day that Newman seemed to gravitate and towards and excel in roles where he plays likable criminals.
Likable criminals, anti-heroes, unreliable narrators.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of found a niche in that.
Yeah, and he played some definite bona fide criminals and bad guys later mm-hmm. on in his career, but he really seemed to like the Han Solo type
right.
character, where it's
charismatic ruffian.
He's done some shady shit, yeah. But you still like him anyway.
I know. All right, well, with that, we're going to go into our next segment, which is the Midnight Double Feature. And this is where we each talk about two films that are within the catalog of this week's subject, being Paul Newman. And we talk about why they are appropriate to be shown back-to-back in, like, a public forum. Does it sound good?
Yes.
All right, how about you, Sean? What did you pick for your double feature?
All right, I went with two films in which Newman plays a hustler. And the first is the sequel to The Hustler, The Color of Money.
The Color of Money.
This is from 1986.
Spoiler, it's green.
It's green, yeah. And this stars Paul Newman, Tom Cruise, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also directed by Martin Scorsese.
Scorsese.
And as I said, it is the sequel to The Hustler, where he plays the young pool shark with Jackie Gleason.
Mm-hmm. Fast and, Eddie.
Yes. And he
and
pretty
Minnesota
much,
Fats.
Yes. And so he pretty much becomes the master in this one, and he's trying to bring up Tom Cruise's young character, Vince, and teach him the ways of hustling.
Right.
And in doing so, kind of creates a monster, and he decides he wants to get back in the action and get into legitimate pool, and they just, you know, it's a fun movie.
It was kind of problematic on set because whenever they were actually shooting the pool scenes, Paul Newman kept mistaking Tom Cruise's teeth for the cue ball. it was a real scenario they had to work out.
I'm pairing that with a lesser-known film from 2000. It's called Where the Money Is.
Okay.
This is a movie with Paul Newman.
Is it in the butt?
No. It's with Paul Newman, Linda Fiorentino, and Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot Mulroney.
Yes. And Newman plays a hustler, and he's hustling the system. He's a criminal. And yeah. He's been arrested, and he fakes a stroke, convincingly so, that he's practically a vegetable. And so they get him out of jail and get him into a nursing home.
And then he's just fine.
And no, he holds
keeps
character.
The charade up.
He holds character, but Linda Fiorentino's she's a nurse and she kind of picks up on
she's
some
on
things.
To him.
Yeah, and it's kind of sexy. She kind of does a lap dance on him
just to see what
to
happens.
See if she can get a literal rise out of him. And she finally gets into break character by dumping him in a river.
Oh,
because she's so convinced that he's putting.
What if
on.
She was wrong?
Oh,
though?
I know. But the long and the short of it is that she wants to team up with Paul Newman to pull a caper. They rob an overnight delivery or pickup rather of an armored car,
okay.
Picking up the deposits from all of these different businesses and then get away with it.
Yeah,
and you know. Things go kerplunk and get kind of hairy. But there you go. Two hustler movies with money in the title.
All right. I was interested / wondering why you didn't just pair it with The Hustler. But I see where you got your tangential relationship. All right. And it's also funny that you mentioned hustling because I think both of my films kind of embody that hustler, subterfuge, kind of shady dealings type of atmosphere. The first one is Harper from 1966. It's got a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's directed by Jack Smite, whose film credits include The Traveling Executioner, Rabbit Run, and Damnation Alley. A struggling private eye, Lou Harper, played by Paul Newman, takes a simple missing person case that quickly spirals into something much more complex. Elaine Sampson, played by Lauren Bacall, recently paralyzed in a horse riding accident, wants Harper to find her missing oil baron husband. But her tempestuous teenage stepdaughter, Miranda, played by Pamela Tiffin, thinks Mrs. Sampson knows more than she's letting on. The film is based on Ross McDonald's 1949 mystery, The Moving Target, featuring private eye Lou Archer as opposed to Lou Harper. They changed the name to Lou Harper for the movie. So it's a film noir-esque movie. It's not in black and white, but it is film noir. And it's the character that Paul Newman plays is very much inspired by Sam Spade and those hard-boiled detectives. And so I'm pairing that with another movie, a much more famous movie, that is about con men. And I think that the world of con men and the world of private detectives are very close shades apart. They're very near to each other. And so the movie is The Sting from 1973. It's got a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by George Roy Hill, who also directed Slaughterhouse-Five, The World According to Garp, Slapshot, and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Following the murder of a mutual friend, aspiring con man Johnny Hooker, not to be confused with Johnny Lee Hooker, played by Robert Redford, teams up with old pro Henry Gondruff, played by Paul Newman, to take revenge on the ruthless crime boss responsible, Doyle Lonigan, played by Robert Shaw. And Hooker and Gondorf set about implementing an elaborate scheme, one so crafty that Lonigan won't even know he's being swindled. As their big con unfolds, however, things do not go according to plan, requiring some last-minute improvisation by the undaunted duo. So this is one of those movies that teamed up Paul Newman and Robert Redford. We're going to talk about another one. But they had this certain chemistry that was very attractive to audiences in the late 60s, early 70s. Very, very like all-American. What if we had two princes? All right, so in terms of your double features, are they recommends?
I would recommend both of them. The newer one is a lighter recommend.
Okay.
But it's still, it's fun to watch.
Harper is a recommend from me. The Sting... I haven't seen it in a long time. I watched it when I was younger. I did rewatch some clips just to prepare for this episode, but I would say that in the zeitgeist, in the pulse of culture, it's probably a touchstone. So
yeah, it's
recommends
one of,
on both.
That's one of Fisher's favorite movies.
Is it?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Former and returning guest Brian Fisher. All right, well, that will wrap us up on the Midnight Double feature for this week, which brings us into our feature segment, which is the recap. This is a segment where we each, we take a movie that is within the catalog of our subject, this week being
the films of Paul Newman.
Paul Newman, the films of Paul Newman. And then we hypothetically recast the main roles with some contemporary actors. So the first movie that we're going to recast is from 1969. It was also directed by George Roy Hill, and it's got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Classic, I believe. It's the true story of fast draws and wild rides, battles with posses, train and bank robberies, a torrid love affair, and a new lease on outlaw life in faraway Bolivia. It's also a character study of a remarkable friendship between Butch, possibly the most likable outlaw in frontier history, which kind of speaks to your point about him playing the charismatic criminal.
Right.
And his close associate, the fabled, ever-dangerous Sundance Kid. So the movie itself, I've seen it a couple times when I was younger, and really solid Western movie with charm and a little bit of comedy thrown in there.
Yeah, there's plenty of humor.
It's got romance. So what else should we say about it?
Well, I mean, the plot is Butch and Sundance, they're pulling some heists,
yes,
and they actually hoodwink one of their gang members and kick him out and pull his idea for a heist. They do it. It works. They do it again. It doesn't work so good. They end up getting hunted by the posse, and
yes,
they're progressively making their way out of the U.S. and down to Bolivia, where they think they'll be safe. They make it down to Bolivia. Of course, there's a girl in tow the mm-hmm. whole way, and then they start it all over again, and the noose gradually tightens more and more, mm-hmm. and you end up with a very famous gunfight at the end.
Yes, and spoilers?
Well, you know, it's no spoilers.
No spoilers.
But, it is typical of the late 60s. The movie ends on a freeze frame in the middle of the gunfight,
right,
with nothing but audio playing. So it's got some cool elements like that. If you look at the movie poster, if you didn't know it was a Western, you'd think they were just modern dudes,
right,
in an action pose. So it definitely bears a lot of modern sensibility to it.
Did you feel like it had a little bit of spaghetti Western feel?
Yeah, there's some, but at the same time, I think that it kind of blurs some lines for me in terms of how
just
the
like that Alan Thicke song. No, Robin Thicke, his son.
Jesus.
All right. So the roles that we're going to recast are Butch Cassidy, played by Paul Newman. He was 44 at the time. And then also the Sundance Kid, played by Robert Redford, who was 33 at the time. I didn't realize that Robert Redford was 11 years younger than Paul
Newman.
Yeah,
that surprised me.
Also, the love interest, Etta Pace, played by... Is it Place?
Mm-hmm.
Etta Place, played by Catherine Ross.
Which we'll know from The Graduate.
Correct. All right, so who's your Butch?
All right, so I didn't go for any kind of look-alike, face value, or anything. I went with actors and actresses who I think would be just neat in this role. So you're not going to see a lot of similarities. I mean, in my mind, Paul Newman, the modern-day Paul Newman is Paul Rudd.
Okay.
And the modern-day Robert Redford is Brad Pitt. And
okay, I can see the Brad Pitt Robert Redford thing, but not the Paul Rudd.
Really? Look at him.
I don't see it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's just the way I see those modern day. But so I'm kind of going completely against the grain on my sensibility. So my actor is 44 years old. He will be 45 later this year.
Mm-hmm.
You will know him from such films as, oh God, these are all dead giveaways. We'll go with Out of the Furnace. That's a lesser known one.
Mm-hmm.
Gone,
Into the Fire.
Gone Baby Gone. And Manchester by the Sea. Uh-huh. I'm talking about
Casey Affleck. All right, I can see it.
Interesting. I would like to see him in a Western. I think he would look really cool. I mean,
he was in the killing of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which is a Western.
You are right.
Yes. All right. My actor is 44 now. He was in Varsity Blues. He was in Ocean's 11. He was in American Outlaws, which is a Western movie. He's also Hollywood royalty. His name's Scott Caan.
Scott Caan.
Scott Caan is 44 now, same age as Paul Newman was at the time.
Son of James Caan, right?
Son of James Caan. And the Wrath of Caan.
Caan!
Yes. All right, next up, we've got the Sundance Kid himself, played by Robert Redford, who was 33 at the time. And who were you thinking about for this one?
I'm going with a Canadian actor, Andrew Chelsea.
And Buck.
he is, I guess, let me say
this. Can we start calling him Joe Buck?
Joe Buck? Sure. Why not? He's not here to defend himself. Sundance Kid, known for his really good looks and his charm.
I mean, that and was, blue eyes.
And, yeah. And so that was kind of his appeal. And that's how he was able to get Etta to kind of you know, fall for him. So I wanted to go with somebody who was kind of a pretty boy as well.
Yeah.
And you probably don't know him because you're not totally caught up with Letterkenny, unfortunately.
Oh.
He's in the most recent season. He played the character Dirks. He was Katie's love interest for about four episodes. He was also in The Girlfriend Experience and the TV series Unreal on Lifetime.
What is it?
His name is Tyler Hines.
Who is he?
Tyler Hines.
Tyler Hines.
He's also 33, yeah.
He's Teresa Hines' son, heir to the Hines ketchup fortune.
He might be related to Chrissy Hines. No, wait, wrong spelling.
Uh-oh. Well, my actor is also a pretty boy. He's 32 now. He was in The Paperboy. He was in The Beach Bum. He was in The Disaster Artist. And most recently, he was in Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. It's Zac Efron. And that's a recent picture of Zac Efron from 2020.
What did he do to his hair?
He bleached out his hair and then grew a dark beard and mustache.
That's really strange looking.
Yep. Yep. So it's going to be the highlight kid. All right, next we've got Etta Place. Etta Place was played by Catherine Ross, who was 29 at the time. And your pick?
All right, I went with a 30... How old is she? No, she's 28 years old. She'll be 29 later this year. She was in the film Cam. She was in Dream Girl, and she had a small part in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but you'll know her as the Love Witch, Samantha Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Nice. The Love Witch was good. And one of your favorite female directors, / just directors.
Anna Biller.
Anna Biller. All right. My Etta Place is 28 now. Most of my actors today are 1 year under the original actor. Well, and I don't know how that turned out.
Well, we've got to account for shooting time and release.
And also, like, what time of year they were born. So my actress is 28 now. She was in The Town That Dreaded Sundown. She's in Odd Thomas. She's in When I'm a Moth, where she plays Hillary Clinton, or Hillary Rodham at the time. She's also been in several episodes of Californication. And she's married to Jeremy Allen White, who plays Lip on Shameless. Her name is Addison Timlin. Addison Timlin is going to be my Etta Place.
So it's funny you should mention her. I shopped the girl that did the punching.
Oh, on Californication?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I thought about her for this part.
I hear you. All right. Well, definitely a recommend.
Oh, God, yes.
On Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. By all means, check it out. It's got, like we said, action, comedy, camaraderie, girls riding bicycles, which was very new for the time, and just an all-around awesome film.
Unfortunately, it's not readily streaming. You're going to have to rent it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that nobody was carrying this film.
Not even on the Criterion Sean channel?
No Criterion Sean.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to head into intermission, but not before we say, let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves some
salad dressing.
Newman's Own?
Absolutely.
All right. All right, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis. And I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under review.
Like making a whole pyramid scheme, get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
And we're back. Thank you, Chop Shoppers, for bearing with us during intermission. We had to go outside and pee in the yard because we're men and that's what we do. And when we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
Beer check-ins.
And what do we got today?
All right, so we're going to have to stretch to make this on theme, but it is from Old Hickory Brewing. It is the Event Horizon Imperial Stout brewed with honey, a.k.a. The Sting.
Ah.
And agave aged in tequila barrels.
Which?
I figure Butch and Sundance will be drinking a lot of tequila on their way down to Bolivia.
I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would. And some nice cigars as well.
Yeah, so here we go.
Very nice. And
this is a 2018 bottle, so hopefully this thing's calmed down a bit. I didn't really particularly care for these.
What is the style?
It's a stout.
It's a stout aged in tequila barrels.
Imperial stout.
Okay, and that's why you were letting it warm up a little bit before we opened
it. Oh, yeah, and it's still kind of cold.
Gotcha.
So.
Next up, we've got the 2020 Movie Marathon. 2020 is hindsight. No. Yes? Hindsight's 2020. So this is where Sean and I, throughout the year, we try to check in as many movies as we can, the goal being 365 or one new-to-us movie per day. But sometimes we go a little bit of above and beyond. And speaking of that, I'm ahead of the date. This is the 24th day of the year, and I'm on number 29. What are you on, Sean?
I'm on 35.
35. I'm getting a little bit closer to you. No, physically, like right now, I'm getting closer to you here.
You're breathing on me.
Why are you holding my hand?
That's just the way I do. This smells good.
It does smell good, and it tastes pretty good, too. So you're on 35, I'm on 29. I'll give you mine first.
Go for it.
Number 21 is 1917 from 2019. That's a lot of numbers. 2020 Movie Marathon. This is a very immersive war experience. An outlier in that it was set in World War I versus World War II. And I believe it was directed by one of the guys who does James Bond movies.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not James Mangold. It's somebody else. But Dana, get back to us on that one. Also, the main character was in Captain Fantastic, I'm pretty sure. And he was very good as well. Watched it with my lovely wife, Michelle.
Drink.
And we both enjoyed it.
Cool. I've been meaning to watch it.
It's really old, though. Like 103 years.
You're funny. I'm going to check in a movie that has no one you've ever seen before and no one you've heard of. It's called The Velocipastor. You can watch this streaming on Amazon Prime right now. And this is at the recommendation of my BFF, Sonny. An orphan priest inherits the ability to turn himself into a dinosaur. With the aid of his sex worker girlfriend, they fight crime and ninjas.
Clever girl.
It's one of those low-budget movies where they know that they just can't pull off any of the effects that they want to.
Good for being bad.
And so everything is low, low, low budget.
So bad it's good.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I wouldn't go so far as to say good, but it's so bad that it's enjoyable.
Gotcha. All right, my next one is Ford v. Ferrari. Ford v. Ferrari from 2019. Compelling and exhilarating story of Ford attempting to build a race car with Carroll Shelby to compete in Le Mans, which means the men's. No, interesting fact, Paul Newman actually came in second in Le Mans driving a Porsche. So a little bit of a tangential tie-in, yeah.
I like that.
It was starring Matt Damon. And also Christian Bale and Matt Damon. Christian Bale plays the driver whose name escapes me right now, but very headstrong, very not a people person, but a very, very good driver. And Carroll Shelby had to pull a lot of strings to make sure that this guy was his driver. Really good movie.
Cool. This is the last week on the Criterion Channel for the 70s sci-fi. So I'm trying to get them all knocked out, the ones that I've never seen before. And this one is 1974's The Terminal Man, directed by Mike Hodges, starring George Segal. He plays Henry Benson. He's a computer scientist.
He's actually the brother of Jonathan Livingston Segal.
Is he really?
No.
The Segal. You're funny. I wasn't even listening. So for 3 minutes a day, he turns violently homicidal. It has to do with like a brain seizure thing.
Is it all at once, or could it be like a minute here?
Yeah,
it's 90 seconds there.
Right, it can happen. So it's a cerebral sci-fi movie on more than one level. I mean, obviously it's about his brain, but also it's really low key. They really talk it out about going into surgery and them doing the surgery and the medical ramifications of putting a computer in somebody's brain. Basically, they're putting a computer in his brain to regulate his impulses when his brain goes into these seizures. So he won't act violently. It kind of sedates him.
So what year? We're 70 what?
74.
74. So little did they know in 74 that by the 21st century, you do not have to put a computer in somebody's brain. You just give them a cell phone.
There you go. So yeah, he undergoes this procedure and things don't go well. And it's cool. It's a cool movie. You would not be able to pull this movie off today because it doesn't have the big bang. It doesn't have the big ending that, you know, your studio executives want to see. It's really, really low key, which is why I liked it. I really liked it for that very reason.
Right on. All right, I've got one more. Mine is number 28. It's Richard Jewell. The story of the one-time husband of the singer Jewel.
No.
Not true.
Not true.
This is actually the story of the Patsy in the Centennial Olympic Park bombing case in 1996. Some of our listeners might not remember that from being alive then, but I do, and I'm sure you do as well.
I do.
It was huge news, and the security guard who actually discovered the suspicious package came under suspicion himself and became the target of an investigation due to a media leak, and basically his life was ruined.
Yes.
Now, the actor who plays Richard Jewell did an amazing job.
He's the same guy that played in
the
I,
henchman
Tanya.
In I, Tanya. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to look at my actual...
It's a three-name. It's a three-word name.
Yeah, it's Hauser, something Hauser. Outstanding performances all around, especially from Paul W. Hauser.
There you go.
And from the poster, I expected it to be in black and white. Also, it's a solid directorial outing from Clint Eastwood.
I liked it quite a bit, and I do remember it very well. I worked for a company that was a sponsor of the Olympics at the time.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very familiar with the stupid logo, and this is just nerd talk. They didn't get the rights to use the real Atlanta Olympics logo from the IOC.
Okay.
So they had the AT&T logo paired next with this fake logo, and it really bothered me the whole movie. But
gotcha.
Other than that, they kind of nailed it.
From a graphic design standpoint, yeah. It bothered you?
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, that's not real. But yeah, I mean, this poor fella, it was shoddy reporting from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Correct.
And they obviously were upset that this movie was even being made.
Oh, yeah. They threatened to sue.
Yeah, because it points the finger squarely at them for being responsible. And I think somewhat rightfully so. Kathy Bates was in it, and she did a really good job.
Yeah, I think that the four main characters did a fantastic job. You've got John Hamm as an FBI agent. You've got Kathy Bates as Richard Jewell's mother. You've got Hauser as Richard Jewell. And then you've got
Dancing Man,
our man, Sam Rockwell, as his attorney. However, he did not dance.
He did not dance.
I told Michelle, we did a friendly bet that, not really even a friendly bet, it was us betting against the movie. We said, if he dances, we both have to take a shot of tequila. We did not have any tequila.
I did not particularly like Olivia Wilde's performance.
Yeah, well, I think that she was playing somebody you're not supposed to like. Right?
Yeah, but she's still Olivia Wilde.
Yeah.
So... all right, my last check-in for the week will be a Swedish film called Aniara.
Aniara. I watched it as well.
If you have seen the new sci-fi TV show comedy called Avenue 5 starring Hugh Laurie.
No, I have not seen this. What is this?
You've not heard about?
I've not even heard of this.
Josh Gad, Hugh Laurie. It's a comedy about a ship that's carrying a bunch of people, like a luxury cruise liner, and it gets knocked off course.
That's exactly the plot of Aniara.
Aniara is a story about people leaving Earth to go to Mars. There's essentially a shuttle, a gigantic city that takes you 3 weeks to get to Mars. Well, they have to avoid some space debris, and it punctures the hull, and they lose all their fuel. So they're set adrift, off course. And they tell everyone, well, we're going to hook around a planet and get going back in the
right
direction.
Maybe 2 years.
Two years tops. We'll take care of the food. Everyone's good. Yeah, it doesn't happen that way. This is a bleak demonstration of how inconsequential we are compared to the vastness of space.
Absolutely.
It's unforgiving, and it is a pretty depressing film, but I really liked it.
I found it bleak but beautiful.
Yes.
And there's one scene that kind of encapsulates that how inconsequential we are, where the astronomer is holding the glass with the bubble.
Yep.
The bubble in the water. Really good. It's been on my list for a while, and I was glad to be able to see it. Not exactly what I was expecting. Also, parental advisory, viewer discretion is advised.
Trigger warnings.
There's
contained.
Some hardcore sex in this movie. There's an orgy. There's also lesbian shower manual.
Yeah, there's a Suspiria level orgy in this film, but there's also some sad stuff too that happens.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, that will wrap us up on the 2020 movie marathon. And how are we feeling about that beer?
It's okay. I still don't like it for the original reason. Their base stout is not my favorite.
Gotcha.
What do you think?
I'm enjoying it, and okay. I don't get a lot of the tequila. Do you taste the tequila?
No, not really. And that's a tough flavor to combat.
To bring through in a stout.
Yeah, you're going up against an imperial stout. And
true. All right, well, that will bring us to the second part of our feature segment, which is the recast.
Continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Redux. And this one is from 1963. It's got an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Martin Ritt, who also directed The Sound and the Fury, Hombre, which is also with Paul Newman, and The Spy Who Came in from the Cold, The Great White Hype, and Murphy's Romance.
Oh.
Remember when we did the James Garner episode?
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right, so this movie is called Hood.
Hood.
Hood from 1963.
It is not about housing and urban development.
It is not, despite all auspices. Hard-drinking, arrogant, womanizing Hud Bannon, played by Paul Newman, lives a self-centered, indolent life, supported by his hard-working and morally upstanding father, Homer, played by Melvin Douglas. I found it very hard to find a character named Homer upstanding as a Simpsons fan. On the family cattle ranch in Texas, Hud's teenage nephew, Lonnie, played by Brandon DeWilde, blames Hud for the car crash that took the life of his father, Hud's older brother, Norman, but shows hints of following this ne'er-do-well uncle's footsteps when both men pursue family housekeeper, Alma, played by Patricia Neal. Not Patrice O'Neal.
There we
O'Neal.
Go. Yes.
Patricia Neal.
We got it.
Patrice O'Neal is a dead black comedian.
Is he dead, really?
Yeah, Patrice O'Neal is dead.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. So, we've got this really arrogant douchebag, Hud. And
Hud has no redeeming qualities in
whatsoever.
He is a narcissist by today's standards.
He's a womanizer. He's an alcoholic.
He looks out for himself.
And he is living on his father's ranch. Now, granted, he works the ranch, but when he's sober.
Yeah.
And they are in the midst of an outbreak of hoof and mouth disease
right.
on their cattle ranch. And the father and the son, old Hud versus young Hud,
are at odds.
They are at odds about how to proceed. And the younger nephew, Lonnie, has to try and decide who to follow.
Right.
The uncle that he admires or the moral compass that is the father, Homer, played by Melvin Douglas. We also have the housekeeper, Alma, who is dedicated to the house, but she's completely worn out, and she is pretty consistently criticized by Hud for being older and not having a man. And can I say, spoiler alert?
Yeah, go ahead.
Eventually, spoiler alert from 1963, Hud attempts to rape Alma, but his nephew Lonnie intervenes. Now, in the original book that this was based on by Larry McMurtry, the housekeeper was a person of color, and Hud actually does rape her. The nephew does not intervene. And the nephew in that book is the main character. And because this movie was produced by Paul Newman and the director and their production company, Salem Productions, Paul Hud Newman wanted to be the main character. So they expanded that character and made him the lead, even though he is a very anti-hero, unlikable ne'er-do-well. So I found it intriguing to wonder what this movie would have been like had they made it in the original context where the nephew was the main character.
They could have just called it Lon.
Lonnie. Well, there were several working titles. They called it Hud Bannon. They called it That Bad Man Hud Bannon. They called it all kinds of things, and they eventually just settled on Hud. And the studio didn't want them to release it. They tried to squash the film because of the lack of redemption in the main character. All right, so.
Let's get another beer.
All right, so while Sean goes to the fridge, we're going to open a new release from Seminar Brewing. That's seminarbrewing.com. And some of you might be familiar with Alpha Crucis. This is Beta Crucis.
Beta Crucis.
It's not on theme, but it is a new check-in for the show. Ooh, that's a nice crowler foley.
Big throaty crowler opening sound.
There you go. All right, so while you pour those, I'm going to go ahead and go into our main roles that we're going to recast. We've got Hud Bannon, who was played by Paul Newman, who was 38 at the time. And then we've got his father, Homer Bannon, played by Melvin Douglas, who was 62 at the time. And then we've got Patricia Neal, playing Alma Brown. Patricia was 37 at the time. And then we've got the nephew, Lonnie Bannon, played by Brandon DeWild. And originally, when I programmed this episode, I didn't include the nephew. But after having watched the movie, he's a very crucial role in the movie. So we threw him in, especially because it's just you and I today.
Yep.
And we're not hurting for time.
I don't know.
All right. So who's your pick for Hud?
All right, so yeah, Hud, Mr. No Redeeming Quality Narcissist. This actor recently played a similar role, I think, that puts him squarely in the running for Hud.
Mm-hmm.
He's 39 years old. Well, he'll be 39 this summer.
Is he 38?
You will know him from Ant-Man, uncredited. You'll know him from... Spider-Man Homecoming.
Also uncredited.
You'll know him from Snowpiercer. You'll know him from Knives Out. Chris Evans.
Yeah, Chris Evans. Okay.
I think Chris could do it. And I bring up Snowpiercer because that really, I got a new respect for him as an actor.
Did you watch it recently?
No. But, you know, I always thought of him as being just the Human Torch.
Yes.
And then Captain America. Yeah. But Snowpiercer lets you
much
know.
Much darker. Yes.
And I liked him in Knives Out. I thought he was pretty
Knives
good.
Knives Out was good. So if you've ever listened to one of our peers' podcasts, Doug Loves Movies, there's one episode where he is a guest and he showed up drunk and he just like cusses the whole time.
Love it.
Which is ironic because in the Avengers movies, he's like, language.
Yep.
All right. So
who you got?
My actor is 37 now. He was in Her Smell. He was also in A Walk Amongst the Tombstones. And he was in The Guest. He's also on a TV show called Legion. His name is Dan Stevens.
Nice.
Dan Stevens. And I really feel like he could embrace that asshole character.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right. Next up, we've got the father.
Okay. So as I was telling you during the break, I want to add a dimension to the father because there is such a almost children's book quality to the good versus evil in this. You know, Hud is just all bad, and the father is all good, mm-hmm. and Lon is all innocence.
He's torn between the two,
and so I wanted the father to have an element, some sort of subtext, like the father has like something dark in his past that he's conflicted with.
And I don't, shit, the father is God.
No, God.
Hud is the devil.
Shut up.
The nephew is Jesus.
No.
And then the girl is Mary Magdalene.
No. All right. So anyway, my actor, having wrestled with a few personal demons of his own and the law, I think that he would fit into this. Melvin Douglas. By the way, we should mention Melvin Douglas played the dying politico in the movie
Being There,
which was featured in our episode starring...
Peter Sellers,
yes. And so anyway, the guy has a tremendous career. You should look him up. He was a dashing young man in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I wanted somebody who is a bit of a face value, which is what inspired me to go down this rabbit hole. But this actor was in Amadeus. Howard the Duck.
Okay.
Ed Wood. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Wow.
And he's picked up some more acting since then. He's done a lot of the Deadwood stuff.
Was he in Ghostbusters?
He was arrested in 2003 for soliciting a pornographic photography from a minor. It's Jeffrey Jones.
Oh, I thought you were going to say William Atherton.
Nope. Jeffrey Jones, a.k.a. Okay. Ed Rooney.
Ed Rooney.
They look very similar in their young years.
I can see it. All right. Well, my actor is 61 now. He's going to be 62 very soon. Don't worry. He was in Walk the Line. He was also in The X-Files. He was in a movie called Fire in the Sky. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I love Fire in the Sky.
Me too. He was also in Terminator 2. His name is Robert Patrick.
Oh, wow.
Robert Patrick is going to be my Homer Bannon.
I like that. He's got that grizzled...
now he does.
...weather-beaten quality about him these days. I like that a lot.
I didn't realize... See, it seems like Melvin Douglas is older than 62 in this.
Yeah, that's why I went up to 74 on mine. Cool, I like that.
Next up, we've got Alma. Alma Brown, portrayed by Patricia Neal, who was 37 at the time. Who do you got?
I cast Patrice O'Neal.
No, you didn't. I really hope he's actually dead. I mean, I don't hope he's dead, but I think he is, and I hope I wasn't wrong.
So I picked this actress because, as you mentioned, there is the attempted rape, and this actress has a certain... She plays down-on-their-luck characters. She plays tired characters very well, and she plays victimized characters very well. You'll know her from Cloverfield...
Yes.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yes.
Now You See Me 2.
Of course.
Mean Girls.
Absolutely.
And of course, it's Lizzie Kaplan.
Lizzie Kaplan! Yeah. She's good.
She was in Masters of Sex.
Yes, she is.
As Johnson,
I guess. Oh, wait, is that a TV show? Yeah. I was just agreeing with you.
She is a Master of Sex.
My actress for Alma is 36 now. She was in Inglourious Basterds. She was in Galveston. And she was also in By the Sea. Her name is Melanie Laurent. And she's a French actress. So their housekeeper is going to be French.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Does she wear the little French maid's outfit?
Well, it depends. That might be a little bit too alluring for HUD. It might shorten the runtime of the movie. All right, we got one more. We've got Lonnie Bannon. Lonnie Bannon was played by Brandon DeWilde, who was 21 at the time. And who is your pick for the young nephew Lonnie, who's struggling to find his way?
All right, Brandon DeWilde, of course. Do you know who he played prior to this? What role?
He was a child actor, right?
He was in Shane.
Oh, Shane.
Yeah.
Shane, the Western.
He's the kid that goes, Shane, come back. He passed away at like 31.
Yeah, very young.
Young death. But anyway, yes, the idealistic, torn between which path to follow, the actor I picked kind of has that same conflict in his most known TV show, which I'll get to in a second. He was in the very terrible I Am Legend. He was a voice in Frankenweenie. And he was in Charlie St. Cloud. But he is known as Wyatt Langmore in the TV series Ozark. It's Charlie Tahan.
Oh, okay.
Charlie Tahan. He's the intelligent yet white trash kid who's in the bad family that's always trying to undermine the efforts of... the main characters.
The bad guys. Or the good guys in Ozarks.
Well, are they good, though? Nobody's good in Ozarks. Nobody's good. Everybody's got their problems.
Villains. All right, so my actor, this is where I screwed the pooch. I did not write down the name, but I remember his last name, and I remember the main character that he played.
I will help you.
So, he's 20 now, and he played... Carl!
Oh, yeah.
On The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
his last name is Riggs.
Yep.
Something Riggs.
Yep. I shopped
him. He's 20 now.
Yep.
What's his real name?
I don't know. Stay on the porch,
something
Carl.
Riggs.
Get in the house, he's, Carl.
He's looking for work these days.
Yeah, I think that it's unfortunate that he doesn't have work. Chandler Riggs.
Chandler Riggs? No, that can't be
That's
right.
That's his name, Chandler That's not, can't be Riggs. Right. His name is Chandler Riggs.
Chandler Bing?
Chandler Riggs. But he does have a third nipple.
All right, so I do need to say that I hated the character Carl on The Walking Dead.
Oh, God, everybody did.
I really hated him. And when he, spoiler, when he got killed, I was super happy. But he fits this part.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, HUD. First two-thirds of the movie are a drag to watch. Last third, good.
I'll say that the cinematography was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's filmed in like panorama or something
Panavision,
like that.
Yeah.
Panavision.
The scene where they're putting down the cattle is pretty visceral.
The acting is good. It's just a slow burn.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that the movie could be improved. Is it a recommend for me? It's not a recommend. I think that there's good stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not realized on screen.
Gotcha. I'm going to say recommend.
Okay. And I can respect
that. You said
that.
Not.
I can respect that.
Also, because it is a allegory for the Christ story.
Shut up. It's not.
All right. So, bonus segment. Are you ready?
Yes.
For a battle royale?
Yes.
Between the following figures in a battle to the death. Paul Newman versus Gary Newman versus Randy Newman versus Newman from Seinfeld.
Oh, man. Now you give me so many choices. Gary Newman, of course. We do it in cars.
In cars.
He is a pioneer of electronic music. But, geez, I don't, you could knock him over with a gust of wind.
Mm-hmm.
Newman from Seinfeld is scheming, diabolical.
And he works for the Postal Service.
He does. Randy Newman can sing you to death with his
jingles.
His songs. Family Guy did a great job ripping on him.
Burr, 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 burr.
Ladies walking over there. She grabbing a branch. Paul Newman. I'm going to go with Newman from Seinfeld.
All right.
He is the snake of the bunch.
I gotcha. All right. Well, then, in terms of opposing you and in honor of what would have been his 95th birthday, I'm going with the man, Paul Newman.
Yeah, I would buy that too.
All right. So, do you know what next week's episode will
be? Yeah, it was my idea. We're doing Sean Bean movies.
Sean Bean. And it's not just because his name is Sean. You were just like, why have we never done a Sean Bean movie? We talk about him all the time.
He's great.
He is awesome. All right, so, and the movies we're going to be recasting, we'll go ahead and tell you.
Oh.
Patriot Games and GoldenEye.
Nice.
All right, so here is your sneak preview trivia question that will be in Right Answers with Wrong Travis this coming week. Popular in his home county, a 2018 poll for Yorkshire Daily saw Bean ranked the second greatest Yorkshireman behind whom?
The guy who invented Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, interesting answer. It's actually Monty Python comedian Michael Palin.
Oh, great.
Yes, and which ties into an RIP from earlier.
So timely.
Terry
and
Jones.
I love Michael Palin.
Yes.
So funny.
Really good in Fish Called Wanda as well. So we want to thank the engineer.
You got it, man.
Sean, thank you for doing all that you do. What do you think about the new Ghostbusters candy?
Oh, yeah. We've got Ghostbusters candy on the wall in the chop shop
what
garage. We got Stave Puff Marshmallow Man and Slimer, and they're giant.
They're gigantic. Do you want to know where I got them from?
Where did you get them?
Well, I got them from a crazy lady who works at Cracker Barrel.
Which crazy lady?
One of the crazy ladies I know who works at Cracker Barrel.
Because there are so many.
And also, both of those characters were voiced by Ivan Reitman.
Indeed.
Nope, wait.
No,
Zool.
Wrong.
Zool and Slimer.
Zool and Slimer.
Yeah,
that's
all right.
Right.
we want to go ahead and plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. We are on Podbean. That's Cinema Chop Shop on podbean.com. Our Twitter, which we just had to change our password because some asshole logged in from Dylan. Twitter at Cinema Chop Shop, facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. CinemaChopShop@gmail.com is our email address. I've checked it recently, and nobody's emailing us.
Send us emails.
And then also the beers that we check in today, we will check those in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. Anything in general you want to plug?
No, we've got... No, I guess not.
Sushi Night, 30th.
No. Sushi Night's coming up on the 30th. I will go ahead and get an advance plug in, and it's going to be for Axes and X's.
Oh.
At Seminar Brewing.
This is where you throw an axe at your ex-girlfriend.
Absolutely. Drag your ex into the brewery, get up with the...
Strap her in.
The Blade and Bull axe-throwing guys, and they're just going to let you go to town. Oh, by the way, they're looking for artists who want to paint the lanes inside Blade
cool.
and Bull.
Cool. Don't know why you're telling that to me.
So I'm saying that to our listeners, if any of you are artistically inclined and want to do some free art...
For free.
I don't know if they're paying or not. I don't know.
And finally, we want to say farewell to you, the listeners. Please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.